Let us all pray. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, blessed Master, saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles, and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King,
reigning on the throne of my consciousness. I'd like to read from scriptures tonight from the Bible, St. John, chapter 15, beginning with verse 7. If ye abide in me, and my words abide in you, ye shall ask what you will, and it shall be done unto you. Herein is my Father glorified, that you bear much fruit, so shall you be my disciples. As the Father hath loved me, so have I loved you. Continue in my love. If you keep my commandments, you shall abide in my love, even as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken unto you, that my joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be full. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Ye are my friends, if you do whatsoever I command you. Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth. But I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard of my Father, I have made known unto you. Ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you, and ordained you, that you should go and bring forth fruit, that your fruit should remain, that whatsoever ye shall ask of my Father in my name, he may give it unto you. These things I command ye, that ye love one another. If the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you are of this world, the world would love you of his own. But because you are not of this world, but I have chosen you out of this world, therefore the world hateth you. Remember the word that I said unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord. But if they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. And if they have kept my saying, they will keep yours also. But all of these things they do unto you for my name's sake, because they know not him that sent me. I'd like to speak this evening on true friendship. True friendship comes to us, but perhaps occasionally in this lifetime. To find a true friend, somebody who really regards us with an ability to give their lives for us, is perhaps a rare thing. This criteria that Jesus lays down is of the greatest criteria. He speaks of a couple of principles here. One is that he loved his Father first and carried out his commandments. And this is the source of all true friendship. If we cannot blend our minds with God first, then we cannot be a true friend to anybody. Once we have learned to surrender this little self to the greater self of divine presence and consciousness, then we can learn to be a true friend first to God. In being a friend to God, we make our hearts soft towards Him. We make our minds malleable towards His. We learn to keep His commandments. And what are His commandments? That we should put Him first. We should love God first. We should carry out those commandments which He gives us. And it is through this devotion, this aspiration, this desire, and the carrying out of that desire that we become truly a friend of God. And therefore make ourselves reliable, as Sri Yukteswar said, that the person is ever unstable until they have put themselves completely in God consciousness, and then they become stable. We are always moving back and forth. We dedicate ourselves towards one goal, and then the next day we move back and we're on to something else. And the human personality is always like this, because it is attracted by some things, repulsed by something else. And so it makes us unstable. It makes us shifting sands in our own consciousness. But when we become established in God consciousness, the mind becomes steady. The focus of attention becomes singular, and our actions begin to reflect that. Until that time, we are unsteady, and we have no firm ground upon which to put our feet. So all true friendship begins with our friendship with God, because nothing can become stable without that being there first. Once we have focused our attention upon that infinite source within us and become a reliable friend to that, then we might become a friend to those whom we meet. To become a friend means to be always focused on what is for the highest good of another. In normal human consciousness, we find ourselves again in that back and forth of attractions and repulsions. We find things in a friend that we like. We find things that we dislike. We feel drawn towards them when they are nice to us. And we feel repulsed to them when they do something that is difficult for us. And so, because we are established in human consciousness, we find ourselves to be unsteady, unstable. To get focused on God first means that you see the light of God within an individual first, and then you are willing to see the truth about them. And whatever that truth may be, you love them because you love God first in them, not the personality. And this is the secret to true and lasting friendship. You don't love somebody because they please you. You don't love somebody because they act the way that you would like them to act. You love somebody because you see the light of God in them. Personalities may come and personalities may go, but always we love the light within that one. And by becoming stable in the light, we become a steady and a true friend. Now, what does it mean to give your life for another? In the sense of God, it means that we set aside our little wants and our little desires, the things that fill us all through the days of our lives if we don't become God-focused. And we surrender to that inner consciousness. Now, oftentimes comes the question, how do we know that it's God's will or our own personal will? In the beginning, we don't. And so as long as we perceive that it is our will that we are wielding in this lifetime, then we ask God to guide our will, to guide our intelligence, to guide our actions and our words and our thoughts, and that He make it in conformity with the highest light of which we are capable of. But as I have talked about before, in the beginning, we take up meditation. And then at some wonderful moment, grace enters into us and meditation begins to take us up. That is, we feel the presence of that spiritual omnipotent force residing within us start to move. It has a physical reality in that we feel it move within our body. It has an emotional reality in that the energy and the feeling of it moves through our whole being. It has a mental reality in that it begins to influence our thoughts and bring our actions and our feeling and energy and thoughts into conformance with the divine. This is a critical stage in any aspirant's movement from the human to the divine. And at that time, we go past believing that we have our own will or that we're carrying out our own will. We feel the power of this presence moving in us, and we clearly identify it as something being beyond ourselves, a higher power, you might say, that comes in and begins to establish itself within us. And as that happens, this transformational process takes on a whole new dimension. Until that time, we are following the principles and the spiritual laws to the best of our ability. But when this spiritual force comes in, this intelligence, this bliss, it begins to guide us. It begins to direct us in every part of our being. And through that wonderful, mysterious process, we begin to get transformed from human consciousness to divine consciousness. Everyone who is attracted to this path has come for that purpose. If it were not so, you would not be here. And so it is fulfilling the highest, the most powerful, the most terrific experiences that humankind can go through. This transformation from the human to the divine. Now, it's not as many people imagine that you become a non-entity or that you become unconscious or that somehow you become some different person than you are now. We do talk about the death of the ego. We do talk about transformation. But it's not in the sense that you become unidentifiable to yourself. In a very real and true sense, you become more of who you have always been. Most people wander this world feeling like a stranger in a strange land. We were talking earlier about a study that was done by the Fortune 500 companies of all the top CEOs, and they did a survey of these people. And one of the results of the survey is that 80% of the CEOs reported that they felt like that they were imposters, and their greatest fear was that they would be discovered. So most people are playing a role in this world, and they know it. They feel it because they haven't truly become established in their real self. They have a pseudo-self, an ego self. And maybe it's very polished in the world. You know, I have the great privilege of talking to many people. And in talking to them, I hear them talk about their own lack of knowledge of themselves, their own insecurities, and the ways that they feel weak. But then they point out somebody else and they go, you know, I admire them so much. They're so rock solid. They're so stable. They've got it all together. Then I talk individually with this other person that's been named. They too feel like they're a fake. They too feel like they don't know themselves. They feel unsure of themselves. And so I go person by person by person and on down the line. And it'd be wonderful for people to know that when they meet another individual, unless they have become fully established in this higher consciousness, that individual too struggles with themselves in knowing who they really are and feeling at times that they don't, feeling unsure of themselves, feeling like that they're the lowest ones on the totem pole. And on it goes. All humanity is the same. This is not resolved. The doubts are not resolved until we become fully established in that consciousness. Now, you look at some people, and they seem to be quite arrogant. They seem to be think quite a lot of themselves. But again, what I have found with those individuals is that they are overcompensating, and oftentimes they feel worse about themselves than anybody else does. They've just done an excellent job of covering it all up. And so to see beyond the mask and to see that those individuals also are doing the best they can, perhaps, but it is not until we get fully established in divine consciousness that we can truly become a stable personality. You know, the material does not contain the spiritual, but the spiritual contains the material. So as long as we're focused on this world alone and this body and who we are in this world, we do not have spiritual consciousness. But when we become focused on the spiritual and become imbued with that spiritual power and that intelligence, then that awakens us to the true spiritual light of all this world. One time I went to Mother and I had a problem because I was feeling God so greatly within myself. But I asked her, I said, "You know, Mother, I feel God so much inside, but I don't see Him around me. I don't see Him in the people that I meet. It's difficult. And when I get around crowds of people, it becomes difficult. You know, you go through different stages in this spiritual evolution. And there are times when your psychic body begins to open up and you feel the thoughts and impressions and energy of everybody that you meet. And when you get in a crowd, that's quite a thing. And it's quite something to feel all of these things coming at you all at once, and you can feel overwhelmed by it. And that was the case with me at the time. And so I wasn't aware of divinity within them. I was aware of all the conflicting kinds of thoughts and energies that were within them. And sometimes it doesn't make you very pleasant company because it causes you pain. And so you withdraw a little bit and you're not so communicative. And it makes it difficult. But it is a transitional stage that we go through, and we do get through it. And what she told me was that in the beginning you find God within you, and then you begin to see Him all about you and all the people that you meet. And true enough, of course, she spoke the truth, and that became the reality for me. But it took a long time to get there. Gradually, what begins to happen is that you perceive the same life, the same intelligence, the same light that exists within you, first in a few people, and oftentimes the guru is the easiest one that it's easy to see that in. Sometimes not. Sometimes we see the human within that one. And so we go back and forth, because this is ourselves trying to resolve the dilemma, our own dilemma of our own making, of the separation between the human and the divine. And because we haven't resolved that problem within us, we have equal difficulty in finding it outside of us. But gradually, that light grows within us, and it extends to nature, it extends to other people, and at first people maybe we have a kinship with. And gradually, as we do our work, it even extends to those people that we have difficulty with, that are difficult personalities for us to be around. And as this light grows, it becomes an all-consuming reality. And it is at this point, as we stabilize the consciousness within God consciousness, we carry out the commandments or those inner movements of spirit within us, and find the fulfillment of spiritual joy within us, that we see it begin to manifest in every person that we meet, in every situation that is in our life, every impulse that comes to us. We see the divine hand in it all. Now, Jesus said, in order for your joy to be full,
and for my joy to remain with you, remain in my commandments. And he is speaking to the consciousness at the time when it is awakening to this divine consciousness within. And we get joy at moments, and then we seem to drop back into human consciousness again. And then we rise up and we get another taste of joy, and it is so heartbreaking when we seem beyond our own power that we drop back down into human consciousness again. And so to maintain and abide in those inner commandments that the Christ consciousness gives to us, that we act when we're in a human self totally according to the highest laws and principles that we know. We use our intellect to the greatest ability that we have. But then when that spiritual presence comes in and is in full residence, we obey and respond to those inner commandments. And if we do that, we will remain in the fullness of joy of that Christ consciousness. And eventually we rise up and we know the Father, or that unlimited, unparalleled, formless, without any aspect, without any thought, without any human feeling, without any human sensation, that absolute consciousness that is the Father, that is the Father of us all, and who is ever reaching out to us in divine friendship. How many lifetimes have we wandered away with nary a thought of the divine friend that is within us? But the moment we turn our mind within, we get some divine response. Now, it may not be exactly what we're looking for. We may have wandered for generations away from the divine friend, and we just want instant gratification. Isn't that the way with us? You know, the story of the prodigal son is very interesting, because in the story, the son takes his inheritance and he goes out and he squanders it all. And then he finds himself living and eating poorer than his own servants. In fact, the pigs eat better than he does. And so the consciousness has gone just about as far as it can go. And he said, better it would be for me to be a servant in my father's house than for me to wander in these foreign lands again. So he turns his direction back to the father. Now he has to make the journey so far. But the father sees him at a great distance. And he runs to him and embraces him. And this is the story of our own soul, that we have wandered, we've taken our inheritance of God consciousness and of all the life and the intelligence and all the good things that we've been given. And we've squandered it in this life through ego arrogance. But then we finally come to the point where we think it'd be better to live in my father's house as a servant. And we turn our face towards the Father, but we have to make some progress. We have to make some effort on our own. But when the Father sees us from a far distance making any effort at all, he comes running to us, and he makes a feast for us, and he brings us back into the home, and he doesn't take us back in as a servant, but as a son, a beloved, a daughter, an intimate. And in this, Jesus also says, you are not a servant. In the beginning, we feel that we are a servant. We become subservient of the little ego towards the divine self. But then we become an intimate. We become a friend. I one time had an inner revelation come that showed the variety of relationships that people have to God. And it's like God, who is a great king, residing in his own country. And there were all the different inhabitants of that kingdom. Now, some were very far from the king. And the king didn't have any direct influence, so they thought, on their own lives. And so they carried out their own lives without really a thought about the king whatsoever. Then there were others who, because they could get some advantage, bought and sold in the king's name. They sold little trinkets that others might buy, and they had representations of the king, but they were cheap imitations. They didn't mean that much, but they eked out a living for themselves, and some of them made quite a good living. Then there are others who were more intimate with the king. They are part of the administration. They had a more direct relationship with the king, but they bought and sold in power. And what their relationship with the king could give to them in terms of power. Then there were even a more refined group who were the ministers of the king, direct emissaries in intimate communion with them. And they held positions of government. And they dispensed power. And they worked for the betterment and the good of the others. But there was even a more refined class than that. And that were the children of the king himself. And they didn't serve the king because it gave them position or power or because they traded in trinkets of the king. But they loved the king just for what the king was. And as those children grew, they grew like the king. They became more and more. They look like him. They act like him. Their thought process was like him because he was such a good king, a wise king, a loving king. And they loved him. And that was the reason they were involved with him. Let us be like those children. Let us not buy and sell and trinkets. Let us not be in it for the power or for the prestige or for the position. But rather, because we love the Master, we love the King, out of true friendship, out of true love, out of a true willingness to surrender ourselves. And what happens, what inevitably happens, is that we become made in the image of the King. And then friendship turns into oneness. And oneness means that we identify the friend within all. And the friend of friends, that infinite king, manifests through us as the friend of friends to all. And we feel that love towards all. A love that we are willing to give our lives for anyone who asks, when it is the divine that is asking. And that we love not on conditions, but unconditionally. And that our love is ever-present and evergreen and knows no bounds and is willing to tell the truth because the truth is what sets us free. So it's wonderful to practice friendship in a human level, but how much greater it is when we establish it and root it in the divine, and we can become a true friend to God and to all. Just want to stop there. See if there's any questions or comments or thoughts about what we talked about today. Or about your own sadhana, your own path. Share your wisdom.
I'm not doing anything profound, I'm just
getting
a glass of water.
Give me what, 2 minutes, please, Jill?
I will.
Mother's advice to you when you asked her, when you spoke to her about difficulty being with people? What did she tell you to do about that?
Well, at the time we had been talking, she'd been talking to me about, I had said, Mother, I'd like to do anything I can to help you in your work. So she started talking to me about becoming a minister. And when I told her that, she says, well, I don't know how you're going to be a minister if that's how you are. You can't stand to be around people and crowds. Said, that's true, Mother. I don't know either. I guess God will have to take care of it. That was her advice to me. Just thought of something that Master used to talk about in terms of friendship. And that his recommendation was not to become over familiar with people. That when we do, we take people for granted. I think many times in marriage we see that. People become over familiar one with the other. Perhaps a sense of ownership or taking for granted. That when we step back a little from individuals and we have a little bit of that distance, we think, oh, well, wouldn't that be cold? Wouldn't that be unfeeling? Wouldn't that be unfriendly? But the paradox is that as we step back, it allows us to be more intimate with people. So I think that as in marriage, as in friendship, respect has to be the cornerstone. To speak respectfully, to act respectfully, to not be presumptuous, to not be insulting. Sometimes we speak to friends and to spouses in ways we'd never speak to anyone else. And that we should stop such behavior. And resoundly criticize ourselves for it, and then get back on track. And to treat each other with respect, because it is a reflection of ourselves, always. And it is a reflection of your friendship with God, because you are not recognizing God in that one. Doesn't mean that we don't have emotions, or that we don't have likes and dislikes, but to practicing beyond those things and to separate ourselves enough so that we can see beyond it.
How do you go ahead and, you know, speak respectfully but still stand up for your own core?
So how to speak respectfully but stand up for yourself at the same time?
Yeah.
We can look at our language. Is our language respectful to another person? Just basic things. Are we name-calling? What's our tone of voice like? Just you can feel in yourself that your own expressions, how would I feel if somebody spoke to me like that? We can be very direct. We can say things very plainly, very truthfully, holding the respect that this other individual has intelligence, that they have human feelings, and that they can respond to what we're saying. And we can draw. We can say, you know, when somebody else is working very disrespectfully with us, we can say, no, that's not all right. I'm not going to engage with that. I'm going to keep this on a respectful plane. And if you can't do it, I'm going to draw this to a close right now. Until we can get to the place where we speak respectfully to each other. So that's taking a stand, not even just for yourself, but for the principle of respect within a relationship. And that some people are so emotionally driven that they can't bring themselves to get there. And so then we have to consider whether we want to continue on. But we can stand up for ourselves very clearly. It's the most respectful thing that you can do. In fact, not standing up for yourself is a disrespect. It's disrespecting that individual that they can't comply with a respectful relationship. and you're not giving them an opportunity to engage with us on that plane. We all come from different backgrounds. And many of us grew up in households where there wasn't any respect, or very little. And so we get into habits, and we don't even realize what we sound like. We don't even realize how we're coming across to somebody. So as we sensitize ourselves to this and focus in on, is this respectful? We can just put ourselves in the other person's shoes. What if somebody spoke to me like that? What if they used those words like that? It may be hard to hear, but is there respect in them? Or am I crossing a line? And if I'm crossing a line, then I stop it. And I back up, I make amends if I can, and then I restructure myself so I can move on forward. So it's gradually attuning ourselves to that. And as we get more refined, and we watch other people, we watch particularly people we really respect around that. Gosh, that person seems to speak their truth, but they seem to do it in a way that is very clear, not toxic, not shame-filled. I really like how they express themselves. And so we watch people like that. And we emulate them. We try to pick it up a little bit ourselves and do what we can. And through that, we refine ourselves and we change ourselves. Did that answer? It's a work in process. And we learn about ourselves. You know, we learn about how we're disrespectful. And in learning that, it's humbling at first. But there's a model for learning. And it has four different categories in it. The first category is being unconsciously incompetent. We don't know that we don't know. And then we go through a very humbling stage where we become consciously incompetent. We are very aware that we don't know, but we haven't gotten to where we can change it yet. Then we become consciously competent. Now, it doesn't happen all just in a second, so we kind of vary between these. But gradually, we start to get the hang of it, and we see how that works for us and how it works better for us. The final stage, then, is becoming unconsciously competent, that we do it automatically. It's just a part of our personality. And if somebody even asks us, well, how do you do that? I don't know. You know, I just, how do you drive? Well, I just get in my car, I start the key, and I go. It's unconsciously competent. And so it's beginning to go from that humbling stage of consciously incompetent and practicing and moving into that stage of consciously competent. It takes work. It takes time, it takes effort, but gradually it comes. But watching other people is a great attribute as we watch people who we respect. We like how they communicate, we like how they are in the world, and we try that on. And then we refine it and we make it our own. Sometimes it even helps just to think, well, if I were so-and-so, how would I act here? How would I talk? And it comes to us. That energy, that feeling, that consciousness comes to us. And it helps us to get better. That's why Master used to talk about association being so important. Who do we rub elbows with? Because that rubs off on us. Now, a very strong mind can go into any situation and not be influenced by it. But particularly when we're learning new habits, when we're trying to establish ourselves in this inner kingdom, so much better to associate with people who are kindred spirits, and particularly not those people who are running in the opposite direction. It makes it very difficult.
One of the problems in finding a role model in dealing with a really abusive situation is that most folks don't wash their dirty linen in public, so you can't find a role model.
So there is a wonderful thing that I heard this last weekend, and Andrew was quoting something from Deepak Chopra. He's talking about finding the ideal mate, your soulmate. And he said, well, how do you do that? And he says, well, you sit down with a paper and a pen, and you write out all the things that you would like to find in an ideal person. So sounds pretty good so far. He says, then you become every one of those things. Isn't that wonderful?
Am I taking a little longer?
So when we think about the attributes that we're missing in another person, let's make sure we look in the mirror and we find them in ourselves first. And let, you know, sometimes people are a splendid example of what we don't want to be. And let's take it at that. I don't want to be like that. And rather than meeting them on the same level, let us take it to a new level. Let us be something different. And not meet them there. But give them an example of how we can be different. Then we're taking full responsibility for our own lives. And we're not blaming other people for how we are. Isn't that the first tendency that we have as human beings? Well, this person, they're such a terrible boss, or they're such a terrible this or that or the other. If they weren't in my life, oh, my life would be so much better. And we want to push them out. We want to push them away. But if instead we take it as a lesson, this is calling on courage in me. This is calling on strength in me. Now, it doesn't mean we need to stay in deliberately abusive relationships. But we can take every relationship we find ourselves in and use it for our betterment, not as an excuse for us to get worse. And so if we take every lesson for us to improve, to get better, then we've used it to its fullest advantage. If we only use it as a means to complain and to for ourselves to act badly, then we're totally misusing the lesson that's being presented to us. And of course, it doesn't help us in our soul evolution, which only means that if we die in this lifetime with that unresolved, we get to come back again. And we get to do it all over again. And as Elizabeth Hike says, eternity is long enough. And it is. Could be worse.
Just keep with the one you're with and deal with it.
And when, oftentimes is the case, when we've learned the lesson, we're released from it. And so we're working. Now this, as I say, it doesn't mean that we need to keep ourselves in terribly abusive situations. But we can also use it for our fullest advantage. Most relationships are not those terrible abusive ones. That's the rare examples.
Like we keep finding ourselves in the same situation.
We better be looking in the mirror, because there's something about us that's drawing that to us again and again. Yeah. As Sister Gyanamata, one of the great disciples of Master, used to pray, Lord, don't change my circumstances. Change me. What a greater attitude. And that's what you have power over. You have power over changing yourself. You're not going to change this whole world. If you're waiting for this whole world to get enlightened before you get enlightened, you're going to have a wait. Eternity is long enough, but maybe just barely. So, you know, the thing to do is to change ourselves. So real friendship, sometimes people, and it's common in Christianity, well, I need to be forgiving towards this person. It doesn't mean you become a doormat. Because that's not respecting the light within them. You're letting them get away with murder, perhaps. Or something just a little bit less than that. And that's not being respectful to the light within that person. And if it's abusing you, that's not helping them. They're building up bad karma. Being respectful means respecting the light in them, drawing on the light in them, seeing the light in them, and never letting go of that light, whatever the outside circumstances look like. And if they're willing to hang in there with us, even when we give them some strong medicine, then it'll be good. It'll get better.
Yes.
change yourself and you will change thousands. And Mother oftentimes quoted him. And not because you set out to change other people, but through your own example. You become a magnet for change. People are hungry for that. We see that in society all around. They would love to have heroes. Of course, we have a specialty in, you know, tearing down anybody who kind of enters into that realm these days. But people are hungry for that higher ideal. They want that. But the world is becoming disillusioned. Our society at large is becoming disillusioned with that idea. But it all works for good in a way, too, because the more it's lacking that, the more hungry it will become for that. And one day, they'll find that ideal. And, of course, the greatest ideal is the light within. That's the greatest. But oftentimes, especially in the beginning, it's easier to find it in others. So to look for those heroes in life, and they may not be famous at all. They may be a very simple, very humble person. You know, I met this Sri Tyagi when I was in India. He was a guard at the dam that was next to Keshabananda's ashram, Kesha Ashram. Very humble, very simple man. But he had this darshan of Babaji earlier in the year. And what a wonderful soul. He left a fragrance of God with you when you met him. And there wasn't any doubt in my mind. He was not a braggart. He was not somebody who's out for publicity. It was the other devotees who were encouraging him to come forward with the story. Very sweet, very humble. And when you meet somebody like that, it's like taking some lilacs and putting them into your room. And the fragrance and the beauty just fills up the whole room. Not because they're trying to impress, it's just their nature. And when we're a true friend and when we're attuned to that light, that becomes true for us also. And the greater the light, the more that's there. So it's wonderful to look in this world and to see those whom you can emulate. They may not be the whole package, but there may be some part of them. And you say, I'd like to be like that. And as Lahari Mahasaya used to say for us on the path, working, 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 one day behold the goal. Striving, striving, striving. And if we're more focused on the striving than the goal, then we make it all happen. It comes to us. It's something that I was shown the other day about the revelation of Jesus, his story. He says, behold, I stand at the door and knock. And then if any will open, I will come in. I will sup with him and him with me. That our part is to open the door, to become receptive. But we don't have to go running out after him. He comes into us. Isn't that wonderful? It takes the burden off of us having to try to create it or make it happen. Or our part is to become receptive, is to open the door. And in opening the door, the divine consciousness, the divine light comes in and it sups with us. It shares its abundance with us of spiritual properties. And through that, the fullness of our joy becomes complete. So just try it. Just try sitting, becoming still, opening yourself in total receptivity to that highest light and consciousness. And feel it coming into you. And receive whatever is there. Don't try to dictate what it ought to look like. Just be open and receptive to exactly what is there in the moment. And if you do that, you will have a spiritual communion. And you will feel your joy becoming complete. And in that friendship, you become friends with all. You find friends everywhere. Guru Purninamade is the day that we use as a day of dedicating ourselves to the Guru. The true Guru is that omniscient presence and light that is all pervasive, all loving, all embracing, and in human form uses the instrument of the outer guru as its manifestation in this world, all with the intention and effort of putting us in direct contact with that divine light within. So, true Guru Purnima Day is dedicating ourselves to that great omniscient light that resides within and everywhere about. And with a special love and devotion for that outer manifestation which that omniscient consciousness is used as its physical instrument. May Mother's blessings and presence be upon you. May she bless you with true and pure devotion for that infinite intelligence and light that is God. May she lead you to the homeland of your spiritual soul now and always. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Jesus Christ, Babaji, Lahari Mahasya, Swami Sri Yukteswarji, Master, Mother, Friend, Beloved God, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy presence, surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My heart is bursting with thy love. I feel thy healing presence in every part of my being. Let me always reside with thee. Let me always love thee. Let me always serve thee. Within and without. Peace, bliss, amen.